Testing 1, 2, 3.
Back in ancient China, long, long ago, there was a farmer who had a son and a horse. One day, the horse, which was one of the farmer's most valuable possessions, it ran away. His neighbor said to him, "Oh, this is terrible." The farmer's response, "Good thing, bad thing, only time will tell." 2 weeks later, his horse returned, bringing with it 6 other wild horses, tremendously increasing the farmer's wealth and station in life. His neighbors thought this was wonderful. The farmer's response, good thing, bad thing, only time will tell. A week later, while he was trying to break in and ride one of the wild horses, the farmer's son fell off and broke his leg, which back then, without our medical advances of today, was a pretty big deal. Predictably, the neighbors thought this was awful news. But the farmer's response, as you might have guessed by now, was, good thing, bad thing, only time will tell. Finally, about a month later, conscription officers came to the village from the emperor's army, taking with them every healthy young man to fight in a war. Because of his broken leg, the farmer's son was left behind in a war which ultimately killed 9 out of 10 conscripts. The neighbors again thought this was such a blessing. The farmer, good thing, bad thing, only time will tell. We have a tendency in our Western cultures and in our Western philosophies and religions to want to define things, to pin them down. Our perspective on the world is driven in many ways by the Enlightenment, which brought about a focus on reason and science in much of the Western world that has generated tremendous insight into the ways the world works. It's also created huge leaps forward in technology and industrialization that has brought much benefit to the world. This world perspective often brings us to the concrete. Reason and science are geared towards providing answers, towards looking at things in black and white. Scientific theories are proven or not. Decisions we make are logical or rational or not. And there is often a comfort in the ordered world of black and white thinking. Unfortunately, as this story of the farmer, horse, and son from the Taoist tradition illustrates, life is not always so black and white. Every once in a while, I look back at a pivotal moment in my life and wonder how things might have turned out differently. About 9 years ago, I was working in business, and our department was about to go through a reorganization. The company at the time was very pleased with my work and so was set to promote me to being a supervisor as part of this change in structure. They made one thing really clear, though. We couldn't tell anyone else about the changes until they were officially announced. Now, I was so excited and so proud that I couldn't help myself but to tell my office mate, who was a little bit older than me and who had become sort of like an older brother in the time we'd shared that space. And see, he'd already given his 2 weeks' notice, and he was leaving the company, so I figured it wasn't a big deal since it wasn't going to affect him. Except that he told 2 other people in the department, with the same admonition I gave him, don't tell anybody. And of course, the next day, they went to our boss and asked him some questions, and just like that, I went from having a promotion to getting demoted and having my pay docked. Now, I was given an opportunity to re-earn trust and work my way back into our director's good graces, but a year later, when the paperwork had already been filed to finally grant me that promotion, but it hadn't been made official yet, our company was purchased, and all promotions were put on hold. A year later, I didn't make it through the second round of downsizing. And just like that, I was out on the street, unemployed, let go. Now, those were 2 fairly painful experiences, getting demoted and getting laid off. The thing is, if they hadn't happened, I probably wouldn't be standing here right now. I'm pretty sure if I had been promoted before our company was purchased, that I wouldn't have been laid off. And if I hadn't been laid off, there's a pretty good chance that I'd still be working in telecommunications, living in Philadelphia, and not being a minister. And I almost certainly wouldn't have met my wife Elizabeth and have the beautiful children and family that I have now. Now, out of those 2 painful experiences, getting demoted and laid off, there's actually come a fair amount of good. I love my job as being a minister, and I love my wife and kids. Now, when all this happened, of course, I wasn't anywhere near as philosophical as the farmer was in the moment. I was miserable after getting demoted and after getting laid off. There was no wait-and-see attitude happening. I just thought it sucked. But the farmer's perspective was the right one. Ultimately, those experiences did lead me to find much good in my life. The father-horse-son story lifts up a key aspect of Taoism, a comfort with uncertainty, paradox, and ambiguity. Indeed, while there is ambiguity in many sacred texts, the Tao Te Ching, the sacred text of Taoism, is filled with it. While the translations from the original Chinese text into English vary, the gist of the opening line of the entire Tao Te Ching is, "The Tao that can be spoken of is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name." Without diving too deeply into it, one interpretation of the idea of the Tao is as of nature, or ultimate reality, or a force or energy of some sort that flows through all of life. But even in trying to provide this simple description, I'm running counter to that first line, right? Even in trying to name the Tao as the Tao, we fall short in trying to capture it. Much of the rest of the Tao Te Ching is an attempt to name the unnameable, to try and describe that which cannot be described. The Tao is ambiguous. Fascinatingly, our scientific endeavors have unearthed a great deal of ambiguity in the fundamentals of nature. Let's take light, for example. Light itself has properties of both being a wave and a particle. You can do scientific experiments that clearly show light to be a particle, and others that clearly show it to be a wave. Scientists have finally concluded that it's both a wave and a particle. Similarly, speed is ambiguous. There's no absolute way to measure the speed of an object. You can only measure it relative to the point you're measuring it from. In other words, when you're sitting in your car driving down the highway, your book sitting on the seat next to you appears to be stationary to you, not moving. To someone standing on the side of the road, though, both you and the book appear to be moving at 70 miles an hour. Or you could take a tree as an example, something we consider to be pretty stationary, right? But the Earth is rotating. To someone observing from outer space, those stationary trees are actually moving. So, even science has shown us that some things, such as the true nature of light or the actual speed of an object, are not necessarily fixed and maybe even ambiguous. Perhaps unsurprisingly, our Western tendency to analyze and categorize has produced a measurable scientific category for the phenomenon of ambiguity in the human experience. It's called tolerance for ambiguity, and was first created by researcher Elsie Frankel Brunswick in her work studying the roots of ethnocentrism, or the belief that your ethnic group is historically the best that there is. And there's been a lot of work since then. This was back in the 1940s and 50s. There's been a lot of work since then, and you can now take these tests or little mini-evaluations that you can fill out that will tell you whether you or others have a higher or lower tolerance for ambiguity. And it might not come as a surprise that Unitarian Universalists as a whole test as having a high tolerance for ambiguity. Because it makes sense, right, in the context of our faith tradition where we embrace multiple answers and beliefs in response to some of life's biggest questions. And questions, that is another way that Unitarian Universalism embraces ambiguity. One might even argue that Unitarian Universalism favors questions over answers, since we're aware that answers, even scientific ones, can change over time. Most of us here take evolution for granted as a scientific truth, I would imagine, but before Darwin, we didn't even have the concept. And then take Newtonian mechanics, which was the law of the scientific land until Einstein came up with the theory of special relativity. And of course, our own religious answers change over time. I started out as an agnostic and now consider myself more of a theist. Of course, others go in the opposite direction, from theism to atheism. And then some folks change what they believe about what happens to us after we die. And those are just two of the bigger questions. Our beliefs and our values tend to evolve over time. Usually not through giant lurches, but sometimes. But most often it happens gradually. And so if we know that our answers and what we believe often change and evolve over time, the questions, good questions, become even more important. And sometimes, as Rainer Maria Rilke wrote, we don't even have our first answer yet, let alone the one that might change down the road. Rilke wrote, "Be patient towards all that is unresolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answers which cannot be given because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer." Talk about ambiguity. Some answers we may not yet be able to live yet, and so the challenge is to live the questions, so that someday we might be able to live into the answers. Rilke's challenge is for us to live with ambiguity, to live the questions. It can be a hard thing to do. If ambiguity is something we as Unitarian Universalists can embrace, and if Rilke is right that there are some questions we need to live into so that one day we can live into the answers, the broader question becomes, what questions are worth living into? James Ryan, Dean of Harvard's Graduate School of Education, gave a commencement speech about questions that was so popular that he turned it into a book. The five questions he suggests we all ask are, wait, what? Or in other words, trying to make sure you understand what the other person, where the other person's coming from. Second is, I wonder. I wonder if and I wonder why, encouraging us to approach life with curiosity. Third is, couldn't we at least, which suggests the way forward past difficulty and disagreement is finding a place to begin together. Fourth is, how can I help, which he suggests is the basis of all good relationships. And fifth is, what truly matters? Now, they're all great questions, and I encourage you to read the book if you're interested. It's titled, Wait, What? And Life's Other Questions. But I want to focus right now on the last question. What truly matters? That's a question worthy of living into in my book. And what may seem like the answers are fairly clear in the moment, trying to pin down a single answer could be slightly ambiguous. Because beyond being different for each and every one of us, what truly matters for us also changes over time. Think back to when you were 10 years old. What truly mattered for you then? Any different than what truly matters to you now? This changes over the course of our life. Relationships and marriages, children and changes in careers, different social justice work we may take up, and politics, to name just a few. At different times in our lives, different things truly matter. Asking the question over and over again, it's a question worth repeating. It's also worth repeating because it can help us clarify our goals and priorities. What truly matters? For me personally, is it more important that I spend an hour on my phone each day catching up with all my sports and political news? Or is it more important to spend time with my wife and children? What truly matters? We tend to think of ambiguity as something that is unclear in the moment. But ambiguity can be a long-term experience as well. And living into the questions, valuing the questions over the answers, holding the answers lightly, these are all signs of people who not only tolerate ambiguity, but accept it. And I think that's the trick. Even for us Unitarian Universalists who already are on average are perhaps slightly more tolerant of ambiguity than others. Life is full of change and shades of gray. There is rarely one right answer to the deeper questions. And we often don't know if something we're experiencing is ultimately good or bad, even if it seems for sure one way or the other in the moment. The horse runs away, the horse comes back with other wild horses, the son breaks his leg, the son's not conscripted. If we can learn to not only tolerate ambiguity, but to adjust to it, to accept it, and maybe even embrace it, life can become a little bit easier. Friends, as we go about our days, as we go about our lives, may we at the very least make our peace with the ambiguity of human existence. For as much as we know, for as strongly as we hold our beliefs and values in this moment, There is a constant process of change and evolution in our lives and in the world. May we live into the questions, trusting that we will also someday live into the answers.